papers, guidelines, and the very last item said did compile it through, and I thought, well, maybe I'll go for it. There's a couple of pieces there to establish the language that I'm using. A previous audience won't necessarily pre-select it for wanting to know how to compile it. So we have some very simple parser theory. I'm not talking about tokenization, but I am talking about what happens after you've got the token, once you split the stream up. I'm also not talking about code generation on the back end. What I'm talking about is using the one grammar, reusing that grammar for a number of different tools, and where that analysis may require common semantic analysis, for example, C and quite a few other languages require that you know an identifier is a type before the lexer passes it to the parser. So there are those aspects. And the technique I'm going to talk about today allows you to have a common base class from which you derive other tools. Common base class for the grammar, not necessarily for 14 different CPU backends for a compiler. And I'm making some assumptions. I'm making some assumptions that you are able to figure out when I write one of these grammar productions that you'll be able to read it. This is pure YAC syntax. It's nothing special. It's not EBMF with YAC. It's merely EBMF with YAC. But I'm just sticking to YAC. So that's all I'm demonstrating. There are plenty of other parser generators out there. I'm aware of many of them. And every day, particularly this week, people are telling me about more. I am going to talk a little bit about syntax trees, not necessarily abstract ones. But from the grammar there and the example there, we have a corresponding syntax tree. And I will be talking about trees quite a lot. They provide you with a data structure which you can then rearrange, reinterpret, optimize, play games with. And some of this talk is about playing those games with trees. It's not talking about the back end, as I said. There's a lot to compilers. I'm going to reiterate that I'm not talking about the other 74 pieces, just the first four in the diagram. set expectations. The tools, and particularly wanting to be able to share the grammar. Because if you look at a tool which, say, does a Halstead complexity measure, or Custer's a bad example, a cyclomatic complexity measure, you actually have to pass it into an abstract syntax tree before you can calculate the metric, which is a lot of work that a compiler does, but the actions attached to grammar portions in parsers are usually written in the case of YAC in C, and you can use it in C++. But it has an unfortunate side effect. What normally happens is all of those productions get filled up with tool-specific uses of that syntax. And they're chock full of tools. So if you wish to take that grammar and use it for another tool, first thing you have to do is strip out all of the uses made of that grammar by the other tool, and so we don't actually get reused. We don't get to use the same file compiled the same way for two tools. And there are clues as to how to do this. This is a literal example out of GCC. On the left-hand side, we have the beginning of one of our grammar productions. And the first two lines are YAC, and the rest of the column is all C. But we can rearrange things, we can change it. If we park all of the gun in another function, in another file, we can, in fact, get more of our grammar and have it not so utterly overwhelmed by the amount of C. And this shows up as something that we can do. Because what we can do is we can move all of those production bodies into external functions. We move them there entirely. And in C, then we can play linker games and link two different tools to the back of our grammar. Or we can make them methods of a base class. If we make them pure virtual methods, now we have something that we can reuse again and again and again. So this is the piece that I'm talking about, and this is the technique that I'm going to be talking about. Using system that some of you may remember, and probably not very many, called UCSD Pascal, the port to the Apple II. And it would run Pascal, but even compile itself, it was a self-hosting system, or whatever, it could be the source. And it ran on 1 MHz, 6502 inside an Apple. And it worked, surprisingly. The compile times were in the order of lines per minute, not lines per second. Good match. And so I came across a while back a couple of disk images, which I've been trucking around for years and years, with all this old code, and I thought, I wonder if I can get it to run again. But I didn't have an Apple II. Fortunately, there are the necessary pieces out there on the web. And recently, UCSD issued a license so that you were allowed to have, modify, improve, but it's not quite an open source license, the sources to UCSD Pascal. The really funny thing is that the website only contains the license. You have to go elsewhere on the internet to find the source. So I took this and I tried compiling it up and I found some Apple disk images and I found an Apple II emulator and glue them all together. And yes, UCSD Pascal comes up and works. But the sources from UCSD aren't quite self-hosting, which is really irritating. So I thought, oh, how might I compete? The answer is serious retro computing. But anyway, I'm a good way into writing a cross-compiler that takes UCSD Pascal and outputs the UCSD Pascal virtual machine. Yeah, they had a virtual machine back in 1981. And worked pretty well, and it was well described and ported to a lot of microprocessors. So that's where my examples are. And of course, the source code looks horrible, so the first thing I want is preprint. Second thing I want is the cross-compile. So it's really very simple. Our parser has pointed to an abstract translator, and we derive from that abstract translator, concrete tools. In this case, we only have two, but you can imagine lots of other uses. I'm going to digress a little bit and talk about how typically expression parsers happen. It's a very, very common way of implementing expression trees. Remember I had a picture of abstract syntax trees before? Very common. You have a completely generic data structure for holding all the different variants and a field which says which variant in the union you actually are using for any one expression type. I don't know how many times in my career I have used just this. It's very common, it's frequently used again and again. But I'm pretty much convinced it's an anti-pattern. The implementation with this, you wind up with, okay, I want to generate code for my expression node and you get a switch. But if you want to do anything else to the expression node, you have another function with your cross-function method, and it will have a switch. And so you wind up with this series of parallel switches. And every time, what the switch does is select one disk variant, so go and do this. And this code is remarkably fragile in maintenance phase. Because somebody will go, oh, I don't want to add another thing to the union. It's too much trouble. I'll just abuse one of the existing union members. And then someone else comes along and tries to deal with the unabused case of using that system member and changes something, and all goes to hell in a handbasket. So it's quite fragile. And it's also wasting memory. If one of your variants is significantly large, and all the others are really quite tiny and only did a few pointers to other expression nodes, you wind up using more memory, sometimes much more memory, than you actually need. Again, a maintenance program naively can add huge memory to the union, and suddenly your memory usage explodes. So it's a little bit fragile, and it's not great. And it's an anti-pattern, because there is a simple way in C++ to say exactly the same thing. Okay? And this is explicitly what virtual methods are for. We have each of these methods, we have an abstract expression-based class, and suddenly the abuses of the union disappear because the union is not there to be abused. And we have a bunch of pure virtual methods. And then we would derive specific expression node classes from our abstract expression-based class. And so our addition expression only replaced our ID that we were using previously with what people call a V.0 for our C class. And that V.0 effectively does the job of a switch, but it frequently does it more efficiently, because in some cases your switch is going to be very sparse. Sparse switches don't necessarily code up nicely. They can code up quite cascading if then else's to other things. This one does one indirection to find a method pointer very quick. It'll be at least as fast as a switch, and it may well be quick. And each derived expression node class, like addition, like subtraction, yada yada yada, uses exactly the amount of storage it needs. It doesn't have the enormous variant. Only those expression nodes that need that large amount of space, they will define their own private instance variables. And so things come out much more cleanly. The code, and in the end, it's all the same code. It's executing the same things. You reach the end of the expression tree, produce the thing you would want, whether it's code generation or pretty preaching or whatever else. So that's the essence of the technique that I want to talk about. There's a way of recognizing when polymorphism can be used and exploited, giving you some performance benefit, usually giving you quite a significant storage benefit. And so what we do is we attach these things. And did I have one for this one? So if we had a production which was an addition, and we'd say an expression can be defined as some expression plus some other expression, and we would attach the appropriate code. There is a slide. The code simply says that we have our context, this one is important. We take our expression, and for each piece of code attached to a production, we call a method on our translator. And that typically says, oh, this is an addition. So it has a factory method for addition. And you'll see that on the code. So it calls that factory method, but it's abstract. It's an abstract virtual. The grammar doesn't know what it's going to come back with. For a compiler or a pretty print or whatever it is. The concrete instance of the translator will say new expression something, and it will generate a dynamically allocated appropriate for the translator, appropriate for the context, object instance. And it will do this for all of your productions. This one has only two examples because more is more. But even for Pascal, you've got a dozen or so different instances of operators you've got to deal with. Two divide operators, which is really fun. Assignment, equality, less than, greater than, zillions of them. They all can be used with exactly the same pattern of code. Just do it all the same way. And so you can get the low-hanging fruit really quickly in your compiler. You just plus, minus, multiplied by, all easy, all comes out. And then having reached the end of all of the things you can do with write one to print out the result, so that you can check things. Having reached the end of all you can do without doing any assignments, suddenly you come across assignment because it's hard. Assignment is really interesting because our grammar said we can have an expression which says some expression is assigned some other expression. But the expression grammar, the for an identifier, doesn't know. Is that a right-hand side variable? Or is that a left-hand side variable? If it's a right-hand side variable and a value, it's a left-hand side variable. the grammar knows whether it's on the left or the right. You get a few interesting shift reduce and reduce conflicts that you have to deal with, but Jack's not too bad at dealing with those. But it gives you fundamentally horrible error messages. Because instead of telling you what you did wrong, instead of having the opportunity to suggest how you could go right, it just says, I have no idea what you're talking about. I give up. This isn't useful to users. The example on the right is what I'm aiming for, because particularly having written in C and C++ and similar languages for a very long time, it's really hard to put a colon before the equals for me. My fingers just don't do it. And so I get this error a lot. And so I wanted a better error message because I can stare at the line sometimes for quite some time before I draw on something that I've had that problem. So this is the error message which actually comes out of my custom file. And it does this by moving all of the work in figuring out whether it's a valid assignment, given any two expressions, into the semantics and leaves it out of the syntax. But to do this, we then have a problem I talked about before. Is that a left-hand side identifier or a right-hand side identifier? Is there a way that we don't care? Or if there isn't a way that we don't care, can we make one out of the other and make an assumption? And the best assumption is that it's a right-hand identifier. Because things are passed to functions, they are calculated with arithmetic with them, you play with them, all using their value far more often than we assign to variables. So it's a pretty good assumption. So the question becomes, can we make the left-hand side out of the right-hand side? And this is the left-hand side of example. This is a very, very common implementation of this problem. We take the left-hand side and we start groping its private parts. And we say, what are you? Are you a shape that I know how to deal with? Yes. Mangle your evidence, take your apart, put you together differently. And if we don't understand it, right at the end we go, I give up. This is the silly thing to do. But remember before when I said that we had replaced the ID with a V pointer? When we had our other pattern, which had our union. And the fact is that this is something terribly similar. We're switching on some sort of ID. But our left-hand side already has a V-pointer. So why don't we let the left-hand side do the work? Instead of trying to force it into exactly the same pattern as all the other operators. And the trick is really simple. We use the left-hand side. Except this time, instead of being pure virtual, it's merely virtual. And the default implementation for the expression mode, when told, here's the right-hand side, turn yourself into assignment and hand me back the result, requiring no access to any private. When we do this, the default implementation of the expression class contains the error message. By default, this is a silly thing to put on the left-hand side. So for a less than operator on the left-hand side, that doesn't make any sense. For a 7 on the left-hand side, that doesn't make any sense. So all of these things, by default, will say, don't belong here, that's wrong. And then for expressions which can be on the left-hand side, such as an expression node which is an identifier, the symbol table tells us what its address is, and in order to be a value, we've indirected on it. One of the implementations you can use is to make an address of node an indirection expression node and link to it. So that in order to dismantle that right-hand side, to make left-hand side, we pull out the address in that expression node and build ourselves a store instead of a load. A store dereference instead of a load dereference. It comes out very clean. And it generates better code. There are no downcasts, safe or unsafe. And C++ does give you the ability to do a safe downcast. It's quite verbose. But we don't need any downcasts at all. There are no casts in there to get wrong. There are no casts to confuse anybody. Maintenance mode, this is more stable because they just haven't got access to the things that they're going to shoot themselves in the foot with. So this alone. And we can then use this pattern. places where something isn't a strict, simple load my value. And things that are directly relevant are an array reference, left-hand side, square bracket, right-hand side, close square bracket. But left-hand side isn't a load value, or usually isn't. C's an interesting language in that respect. But basically, you use exactly the same technique, and you have a virtual method, which says turn yourself into an array index, and here's the index to index yourself with, return me an expression. And also when we're getting a member of the dot and the pointing at operators. Pascal doesn't have pointing at, it has dot. So those things also can use this same technique. And again, I'm not a sensible thing to do an array index on when applied to the number 7. I want to talk about C, right?
Excuse me. Please. I followed the talk so far. I'm just a bit at a loss as to why you wouldn't just make an improved version of the counter example that you have in the mode on the left. Why wouldn't you just have a virtual expression assign method, which is different for things that aren't valid LHS, like an integer variable or what have you? What's the specific motivation of using a factory? That's one of my questions.
It is entirely possible in the counterexample that we would attach in the grammar a hollow translator make me one of these. And you could put indirection in there. But the piece on the left, it's not a switch. It's basically a if then else tree, which frequently compilers do to switches anyway.
Yep.
But basically, we're using whether or not it's a particular ID, because that's all if you use dynamic cast, for example, in C++, you can discover whether it's a particular class or not. So if you are this class, then do this.
I'm not suggesting to use the counter example or something like that. I just would like to know what the motivation is for using a factory instead of just making expression assign virtual.
We haven't got the ID on the left. In order to get the ID, we use a dynamic cast. But if we're going to do that, it means that we can already, because we have something already that we can do that too, use a virtual method instead. And it will be quicker. You can imagine that the last thing you test in the list, of course, is always going to be the slowest performance. Whereas with a vpointer, it just happens. It doesn't do any of the downpass, doesn't do any of the ifs, doesn't have to do any of the tests. It just says, hello left-hand side, I'm told you're supposed to be an assignment. And it's one indirection, it's significantly faster in this case. And to me, having played with this for a while, these are different instances of the same pattern. You're swapping an ID for a B pointer. So use the B pointer. Don't try and go backwards and synthesize the ID again out of your object instance. I'm going to race through this next bit so there's enough time for questions, but it turns out that we still have some fun things happening. It's very common if you're actually generating code for an edition that you have to generate different opcodes depending on what sort of edition it is. We have got two integers being added, two reals being added, these are nice and clear. And then U16 Pascal, because it generated code as it did the recursive descent, didn't know at the time it had an integer expression that it needed to turn it into a real. So you have these very strange promotion opcodes which say, top of stack's real, next thing on the stack is an integer, pop the top of stack, promote the integer to a real, and push the top of stack back on. Also that we can do this no backtracking code generate as we recursive descent. Now, I'm putting all of this stuff into a tree, an abstract tree of some sort. And so when I discover I've got an additional opcode, I can actually make a cast expression node, and so I don't need some of the more interesting opcodes that you see as the Pascal method. But again, what we have is we've got a switch. Take an ID, well, in this case, take two IDs and figure out what to do. But it's a switch event. This is a multi-method. This this is where you need to switch on two V pointers. Something that C++ has no direct support for. Other OO languages do. But it is in fact, and it took me a while to realize this, and some months of ear bending before somebody actually figured out what I was on about. This is the 2D case of the previous pattern. We can turn this into a much smaller number of indirections, a much shorter set of tests. But we do have to find a way, and in this case, C++ can't help us as well. You know, you need to switch on two V points, and that's just not true. But the goal in this case is to produce two addition node types, one for real additions and one for integer additions. And we're going to generate that, not at code generation time, but we're going to produce the appropriate instance when we instantiate our expression node. Just like we did before, we move the whole, what am I going to do today, out of, we move the switch, or the, if anything else, out of the method body, and shift it all the way up to object creation time. So instead of code generation time, we're doing it at object instantiation time. So the right-hand side is where we're trying to get to. What I used in this case, the next slide isn't there. Sorry. What I used in this case was a table. And the table contains three things. It contains two pointers to simple tests, which take an expression node as an argument, and one pointer to a method, a translator method. So out of this table, we can do our tests. Is it one of these? And it can be as specialized as you like. Normally there's Boolean and says, I have an is a static class method. It says, is this expression one of these? And so I can just say test, so I can say integer and real. We just do the appropriate thing. We do a new, do the appropriate thing, and the two cases where we have to do the type promotion, they in fact can be put into the base class. All of our tools are going to want to do that, or they won't care, so it won't matter. We can just put those again. And our method pointers can point to virtual methods or static methods. So we can overload as much or as little as we need to with our table. And the end result is that we, unfortunately, haven't coded here, but it winds up that the expression factory method that lives in your derived translate class calls this table to dispatch left and right hand side, which decides. And again, if that table has no entries in it, you get a generic error message saying, this is an inappropriate operation. And I pass the constructor the name, so I can insert the name into the error message. And so you get the same error message out of the default case. It's a bit of a hand wave, because I'm running out of time, and because didn't tell it about it and I didn't commit. Okay. So what I've tried to do today is give you a way of recognizing. co-generate the left-hand side, obviously, co-generate the right-hand side, whatever that is, go through the virtual method and just do it, and generate my opcode, either a real addition or an integer addition, or a string concatenation, if that's generally bad. And it doesn't support it in the original compiler, but it does in mine. So that's it. What we've got is these tiny little classes. We've got a huge number of them. Because C++ is really quite verbose. And plus, I've found that it's much more comprehensible if you have a fairly strict one class one file implementation. You can do it the other way, but I find it's much harder to guess where things are supposed to be. If you do that, you wind up with quite a lot of files, but you wind up with methods that are very, very short. You know, constant folding on the addition. On the integer addition, like it's a hello expression node, you know, I know you're an integer constant, give me your value, grab, add, synthesize new constant integer expression node with this value. And even that, of course, is only three lines. Very, very small. You could do it in one, but it's slightly ugly. But yeah, you wind up with, for each type of expression node, methods that are very, very close. Instead of a switch full of lots of things, and by the time you scroll down four pages, you've forgotten what you switched on, or at least the maintain account work it out. And it's sometimes very similar, and navigating that sort of file becomes very difficult. Depends whether you like lots of files.
You mentioned the tool age will be, how useful do you find this approach in things like, you mentioned pre-printers, that kind of thing, in making similar tools to a compiler?
There are examples in both of the open source code projects listed that have a pre-printer in them.
Okay.
The pre-printer work in my case was pure self-defense. It also serves as an excellent counterexample. Pre-printers and compilers are sufficiently different. Compilers particularly are much more advanced. It's frequently quite nice to generate, write the code for the pre-printer, write a unit test for it, park it, now we're going to do the compiler, which is going to place more demands on the technique. And you pretty rapidly, if you always generate tool A and tool B, you see the opportunities for refactoring chunks of methods into the abstract base class.
About 3 years back, I was working on a compiler. It was a multiple front and multiple back end compiler. We were trying to use direct object-oriented methods. But we found, I found that I needed a visitor for every back end.
You needed a
visitor method.
Okay.
And how does your system handle multiple back ends? Do you require a separate method for?
For me, if I was handling multiple backends, assuming the languages were sufficiently similar, I mean, we're not trying to jam Prolog and C to the same system, assuming the languages are sufficiently similar, it would be entirely possible that for each language, we could reuse the same translator base class. Might be some more opportunities for abstracting it out. There might need to be a little bit more fine granularity the abstract base class, but for sufficiently similar languages, I think you could use the same translator and translator hierarchy, class hierarchy, with different languages. Not something I've tried. Neat question, though.
So, our problem basically was that we wanted modularity between those two pieces. Bits. So, we wanted the semantic analysis built in the front end object.
Yes.
And the co-generated in the back end object.
Yes.
And you had three front end and two back end. You want to link them. Unfortunately, C++ doesn't allow you to put methods in multiple kind of things.
One of these translators that is on the list there is an application-specific language, and it generates out of its back-end C code. Okay? And I also had it, and this is the thing about pre-printer, it generates out its back-end its own language, which is what pre-printer. If you use this technique and have two different front ends, then you could, using the pretty printer for each language, you can then Pascal. Pascal is just as ugly as C, in that the lexer actually needs to know about types so that it can hand the appropriate token to the grammar. And it turns out Pascal has the same ugliness. Even though it was designed to be an LL1 language and therefore be able to be parsed and code-generated with recursive descent very simply, it still has this knowledge about whether an identifier is a type name or not, which makes some things messy. But it also has a very nasty side effect that the single table management winds up living in the translator, so that the lexer can ask the translator, what type is this? And if it doesn't live in the translator, then you have to have an abstract method in your base class so that the lexer can still ask the translator. But it turns out the syntax analysis, the semantic analysis at that level, what symbols are, and managing the single table can be abstracted between the two. Preprinter doesn't make a lot of use of it. If it's a silly thing to put on the left-hand side, the preprinter doesn't care, it'll still print it. Whereas the compiler will go, no, can't generate code for that, and then it doesn't mean it. So, but I think for two sufficiently similar languages, yes, you could do two front-end. It would require, in this case, linking one and the other, the usual trick we do with C, you actually have to link, but that's not the end of the world. I tend to park most of my stuff in a library, and for one tool, I instantiate one sort of class. The other tool, I instantiate the other sort. And the linker goes, well, you weren't talking to variant V, so I just won't pull in all of those library modules. A similar thing could be used. Again, a common back-end library and many different front-ends against it. It seems to me